This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In the last hour, the U.S. House of Representatives just passed a GOP plan to repeal and replace major parts of the Affordable Care Act. The final vote was 217 yes, 213 no. 20 Republicans and every single House Democrat voted against the bill. We'll hear some analysis about the vote in a moment. And in addition, President Donald Trump and Republican leaders are expected to make some remarks from the White House Rose Garden sometime soon. We'll go to that when it happens. But first, let's listen to some highlights from the raucous House debate that preceded today's vote. And we'll begin with the vastly different takes presented by party leadership. First, you'll hear House Speaker Paul Ryan, followed by Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi.
We can put this collapsing law behind us. End this failed experiment. Let's make it easier for people to afford their health insurance. Let's give people more choices and more control over their care.
Under Trump Care, families, seniors, vulnerable children, Americans with disabilities, people struggling to overcome addiction, and the sick will lose their health care. Rural hospitals will be closed. Nearly 2 million jobs will be destroyed across America.
Nancy Pelosi and Paul Ryan there. All week long, Republicans and Democrats had been exchanging barbs over how the House bill treats Americans with pre-existing conditions. Today, Massachusetts Democrat Jim McGovern said Americans were being misled by the GOP.
To claim or to imply that the Republican plan covers people with pre-existing conditions, it is a lie. It is a lie. And let's be honest about it. This does not cover people with pre-existing conditions.
Congressman Doug Collins, Republican of Georgia, pushed back.
If we want to talk about misleading the American people, it started 7 years ago and it ends today. It ends today. The American people deserve better. They've been thrown under the bus for 7 years. They deserve an insurance market that is open, that is accessible, that does cover pre-existing conditions. If you want the deception, follow the other side.
Well, as you hear, healthcare may be one of the most politically divisive issues in the country right now. And as debate progressed today, the stakes grew even higher, to the point where Rhode Island Democrat David Cicilline described the vote in terms of life and death.
Mr. Speaker, this is the cruelest and most immoral thing I've seen the Republican Party do to the American people. Tens of thousands of Americans will die if this bill passes. That's a fact.
Again, that's Rhode Island Democrat David Cicilline. And the two parties, of course, they stood poles apart on this issue as well. Here's the response from Ohio Republican Phil Johnson.
Where was my colleague and the friends on the other side of the aisle when Obamacare resulted in millions of policy cancellations and millions of Americans losing their coverage because of the broken promises? Where was my colleagues and the Democrats when millions of Americans were forced out of work because of the job-killing policies of Obamacare? Let me tell you something. The American people remembered that.
Well, ultimately, the GOP won the vote today, again, by that razor-thin 217 to 213 margin. The bill, however, faces a highly uncertain future in the Senate, where Republican lawmakers are already saying that major changes are likely. Well, today's vote was being watched with special care here in Massachusetts. And joining us now with more is WBUR's Martha Biebinger. Hi there, Martha.
Hi, Meghna.
So what's the likely response from healthcare experts and policymakers in Massachusetts to the House vote today?
Well, we could start with Governor Baker, who is very worried about what he projects would be a $1 billion loss each year in Massachusetts if this bill or some version pretty close to it becomes law. You had a number of very well-known doctors, Atul Gawande, calling this unconscionable. The Massachusetts Medical Society joins the American Medical Society in opposing this. The AARP was running ads, Healthcare for All, at their phone bank. They've got a rally going in a minute. So a lot of consternation about what this will mean for Massachusetts.
I just received a couple of minutes ago a press release from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts, state's largest private insurer, right? And they say, we're deeply concerned that the American Health Care Act, the GOP plan, will result in the loss of public and private coverage for millions of our fellow citizens and reduce that critical funding for Massachusetts. They also say, in their view, the current proposal will create instability in the market and undermine the ability to provide affordable and quality coverage and care to everyone regardless of condition. That's from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts. So take me a little bit more into what the potential impacts could be here on the ground. I mean, you talked about that major loss of funding. Is that through the Medicaid cuts that are in this GOP plan?
It's Medicaid cuts and subsidies and some money that goes to specific programs. In terms of people, the expectation is that about 500,000 people would lose coverage. And there's a study out from some economists at Harvard today that suggests that loss could be even greater because they say that very few people who would have to buy insurance on their own would do it if they lose the subsidies or the tax credit. So that we may be rolling back the insured market in Massachusetts to where we were in 2006 before we started.
Really? So that would be a profound change here.
It's a big change.
Okay. Well, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, of course, took a look at the national potential impacts of this bill. And, you know, the CBO found that the plan could leave 24 million more Americans without health insurance across the country in a decade. Tell me more about what state officials, Governor Baker, et cetera, say they plan to do if indeed, again, there are major hurdles for the bill still forthcoming, but what they plan to do if this becomes law.
So we don't know what they plan to do, Magna, but we can talk about what it would take to close a $1 billion shortfall or to trim Medicaid. So you might cap enrollment. You might say we're going to say people on Medicaid don't get X benefits, either mental health care or dental, or maybe there's a limit on how much care they can get in a year, or their copays might increase a lot. Of course, if you want to bring in more revenue, you're talking about taxes here, but the governor and House Speaker DeLeo have said absolutely not on that front. But if you have to close a $1 billion shortfall a year, you're bringing everybody to the table. That's not just a healthcare issue anymore. That's cities and towns, that's schools, that's every agency.
Wow. So in the plan, you mentioned the subsidies that Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, offers. The GOP plan replaces that with tax credits, right, of $2,000 to $4,000 a year, age-dependent. Just remind us, how different is that from what we have right now?
Well, so if you were talking to a 54-year-old woman, say, who earns maybe $34,000 to $35,000 in Massachusetts, right now she's getting a very healthy subsidy to help cover her health insurance. Instead of that subsidy, she would have to pay the total cost of her health insurance for the whole year and then wait for a tax credit. Now, the difference between those two things might not be that great. She might get a tax credit that's pretty close to what she was getting for subsidies, but she's got to come up with the money, first of all, to pay for it. And that's why this study out of Harvard is so important, because it says people aren't going to do that. They're just going to drop coverage and go to emergency rooms instead.
Wow. Now, you know, a lot of people have been saying for a long time that there are fundamental problems with the Affordable Care Act, with Obamacare. I mean, that the exchanges weren't serving everyone that needed to find insurance.
That's right.
Especially in many other states. Is there anything in this Republican plan that, again, passed the House today by a 217 to 213 margin that addresses those weaknesses in Obamacare?
Well, for other states, yes. There are many people in the Republican caucus who say we will now have more than one health insurer in many markets. We will let people choose whether they want more or less generous, more generous health insurance plans, and that will help to control costs. And maybe that will bring more insurance plans and choice into the market. So that's speculation. You know, we don't really know whether the changes they're making will improve the problems that they were highlighting, but they're in the bill.
Mm. So, listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the fact that House Republicans today, by a 217 to 213 margin, passed their repeal and partial replace of Obamacare. It moves on to the Senate now, where Republican leaders are saying they anticipate some significant changes to be made to the bill. We are also waiting now for a press conference or remarks that we expect President Donald Trump and Republican leaders to be making shortly from the Rose Garden at the White House. As soon as that begins, we'll take you straight to it. I've been speaking with WBUR's Martha Biebinger. We might hear from Martha a little bit later in this hour as well. Martha, thank you so much.
Thank you, Meghna.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we're going to turn now to the White House Rose Garden, where President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence, standing before a group of Republican lawmakers, are making some remarks about today's passage in the House of the American Health Care Act.
The White House. And thanks to the leadership of President Donald Trump, welcome to the beginning of the end of Obamacare. It was March 2010, 7 years ago, Democrats passed a government takeover of health care. And at that time, Republicans in Congress promised the American people that law would not stand. Today, thanks to the perseverance, the determination, and the leadership of President Donald Trump and all the support of those gathered here, we've taken a historic first step to repeal and replace Obamacare and finally give the American people the kind of health care they deserve. So today, with heartfelt gratitude for all he has done to keep his word to the American people, and for all he will do to continue to make America great again, it is my high honor and distinct privilege to introduce to you the President of the United States of America, President Donald Trump.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. That's the group. Thank you. Thank you very much. This really is the group. What a great group of people. And they're not even doing it for the party. They're doing it for this country because we suffered with Obamacare. I went through 2 years of campaigning, and I'm telling you, no matter where I went, people were suffering so badly with the ravages of Obamacare. And I will say this, that as far as I'm concerned, your premiums, they're going to start to come down. We're going to get this passed through the Senate. I feel so confident. Your deductibles, when it comes to deductibles, they were so ridiculous that nobody got to use their current plan, this non-existent plan that I heard so many wonderful things about over the last 3 or 4 days after that. I mean, it's I don't think you're going to hear so much right now. The insurance companies are fleeing. It's been a catastrophe, and this is a great plan. I actually think it will get even better. And this is, make no mistake, this is a repeal and a replace of Obamacare. Make no mistake about it. Make no mistake. And I think most importantly, yes, premiums will be coming down. Yes, deductibles will be coming down. But very importantly, it's a great plan. And ultimately, that's what it's all about. We knew that wasn't going to work. I predicted it a long time ago. I said it's failing. And now it's obvious that it's failing. It's dead. It's essentially dead. If we don't pay lots of ransom money over to the insurance companies, it would die immediately. So what we have is something very, very incredibly well-crafted. Tell you what, there is a lot of talent standing behind me, an unbelievable amount of talent, that I can tell you. I mean it. And, you know, coming from a different world and only being a politician for a short period of time, how am I doing? Am I doing okay? I'm president. Hey, I'm president. Can you believe it, right? I don't know. I thought you needed a little bit more time, they always told me, more time, but we didn't. But we have an amazing group of people standing behind me. They worked so hard, and they worked so long. And what I said, let's do this. Let's go out, just short little shots for each one of us, and let's say how good this plan is. We don't have to talk about this unbelievable victory. Wasn't it unbelievable? So we don't have to say it again. But it's going to be an unbelievable victory, actually, when we get it through the Senate, and there's so much spirit there. But I said, let's go out. We have a little list of some of the people. And I think after that list goes, if they don't talk too long, our first list, we're going to let some of the other folks just come up and say whatever you want. But we want to brag about the plan because this plan really. Uh-oh. Oh. Well, yeah, we may. But we're just going to talk a little bit about the plan, how good it is, some of the great features. I want to thank Paul Ryan. He has worked so hard. And I was joking. I said, you know, Paul, for the last week I've been hearing Paul Ryan doesn't have it. It's not working with Paul Ryan. He's going to get rid of Paul Ryan. Then today I heard Paul Ryan's a genius. He's come along. You know, the groups have all come together. We have the Tuesday group. We have so many groups. We have the Freedom Caucus. We have, and they're all great people. But we have a lot of groups, but they all came together. Really, Paul, I'd say in the last 3-4 days, especially in the last day, I see Mark and I see Kevin. I see so many people, Jim. We just have developed a bond. This has really brought the Republican Party together. As much as we've come up with a really incredible health care plan, this has brought the Republican Party together. We're going to get this finished, and then we're going, as you know, we put our tax plan in. It's a massive tax cut, the biggest tax cut in the history of our country. I used to say the biggest since Ronald Reagan. Now it's bigger than that. Also, pure tax reform. So we're going to get that done next, and this really helps it. A lot of people said, how come you kept pushing health care, knowing how tough it is? Don't forget, Obamacare took 17 months. Hillary Clinton tried so hard, really valiantly, in all fairness, to get health care through. Didn't happen. We've really been doing this for 8 weeks, if you think about it. And this is a real plan. This is a great plan. And we had no support from the other party. So I just want to introduce somebody to say a few words who really has been, I think, treated very unfairly, but it no longer matters because we won, and we're going to finish it off, and we're going to go on to a lot of other things, and we are going to have a tremendous 4 years, and maybe even more importantly, we're going to have a tremendous 8 years, but we're going to start off with just a great first year. And Paul Ryan, come up and say a few words. Congratulations on a job well done.
You get thick skin. Nice job. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you. Thank you for your leadership. There are too many people to name who played such an important role in helping us get to this part. But I want to thank a few people in particular. I want to thank Chairman Greg Walden, Kevin Brady, Diane Black, Pete Sessions, and the members of their committees for all the hard work they put into getting us to this point. I want to thank all the other members who contributed to making this the best bill possible. It really was a collaborative, consensus-driven effort. I also want to thank the team here at the White House. I want to thank Tom Price. I want to thank Mick Mulvaney. And I especially want to thank Reince Priebus. We could not have done this without you, gentlemen. You guys are the best. Of course, this would not have been possible if it weren't for these two gentlemen behind me. This is the fourth presidency I've served with. I have never, ever seen any kind of engagement like this. I want to thank Mike Pence, and I want to thank President Donald Trump for their personal involvement in working with our members and working to get this right, for getting this done and getting us to where we are. Thank you, gentlemen. Today was a big day, but it is just one step in this process, an important step. We still have a lot of work to do to get this signed into law. And I know that our friends over in the Senate are eager to get to work. They are. We're going to see that work through. You know why we're going to see this work through? Because the issues are just too important. The stakes are just too high. The problems facing American families are real. And the problems facing American families as a result of Obamacare are just too dire and too urgent. Just this week, we learned of another state, Iowa, where the last remaining health care plan is pulling out of 94 of their 99 counties, leaving most of their citizens with no plans on the Obama market at all. What kind of protection is Obamacare if there are no plans to choose from? And this is a trend that we are seeing all across the country. The truth is, this law has failed and it is collapsing. Premiums are skyrocketing and choices are disappearing. And it is only getting worse, spiraling out of control. And that is why we have to repeal this law and put in place a real, vibrant marketplace with competition and lower premiums for families. That's what the American Healthcare Act is all about. It makes healthcare more affordable. It takes care of our most vulnerable. And it shifts power from Washington back to the states and, most importantly, back to you, the patient. Like I said, we've got a lot of work to do. But one thing is now clear. Republicans are committed to keeping our promise to lift the burden of Obamacare from the American people and put in place a better, more patient-centered system. It is my pleasure at this time to thank and to welcome to the stage someone who helped make this so possible, our very talented Majority Leader, Kevin McCarthy.
You're listening to a live press conference at the White House Rose Garden. You just heard House Speaker Paul Ryan talking about the passage today in the House of the American Health Care Act. We'll return you to the press conference here.
We talked about health care. You know what the president said? He said, let's not make this partisan. Don't do what you think is right for the Republican Party. Do what's right for the American country. And today, that's exactly what we did. You see, if you simply read the papers from this week, you take politics out of it, and you put people before politics, how do you look in the faces of 94 counties in Iowa out of 99? Well, not that they won't have very many choices, they'll have no choice. How do you care for pre-existing conditions when there's no care at all? Or you read the paper yesterday and you look at Aetna pulling out of Virginia, or to Tennessee next year with 16 counties with no care. Or what about those families that paid into those 23 co-ops that Obamacare created with more than $2 billion? 18 of them have collapsed, and the only answer that this American government gives them is a penalty. If you simply look at the facts, more people took the penalty or the exemption than actually signed up for Obamacare. I did not run to this office to promote a party. I ran for this office to make this country better. Yeah, and it would be easy to say no. It would be easy to watch it collapse. But I can't look at those families. I don't think that's right. And that's the exact message I got from this administration. So, Mr. President, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your leadership. I want to thank the Vice President. You know, I've only been through a few presidents, but I've never seen someone so hands-on. Walk into my office yesterday morning, they say the president's calling again. I pick up the phone. I happen to be the majority leader, the former whip. I know my members well. The president gives me a list of who he thinks I would be best to talk to on the list. And he was right. And Mr. President, they all voted for the bill. Yeah. Today is a start. Today is the start of a new beginning. Yes, it's about providing better health care. But I happen to have been a small business owner. I listened to my district. You know how many families no longer have a 40-hour job and now have to take two part-time jobs? Or how many small businesses told me that they couldn't expand anymore because they were afraid of what Obamacare would do for them? We are going to unshackle, build an economy, let people have greater choice in their health care, and protect pre-existing conditions. And I thank you for that work. I want to call up. I was this job before being majority whip. I never had to go through a bill like this. And I will tell you, being the whip really isn't one person. The deputy whip should get a lot of credit as well. Yeah. Patrick McHenry. The whip, Steve Scalise.
never gave up.
Well, you were listening to Representative Kevin McCarthy. He's the Republican Majority Leader, speaking in the Rose Garden of the White House at a press conference being given by GOP leaders, including House Speaker Paul Ryan, Vice President Mike Pence, and President Donald Trump. They are celebrating the fact that the House just this afternoon voted 217 to 213, so just by a margin of four votes, to pass the GOP health plan called the American Health Care Act. The plan now moves to the Senate, where it faces more considerable opposition and the likelihood of some significant changes before it passes back to the House. So it's got several steps to go before it becomes law, if it does. But nevertheless, it's a major day for GOP leadership in Washington because they have taken the first step in repealing and replacing parts of the Affordable Health Care Act, also known as Obamacare. We're going to hear from a bunch of voices in the next couple of minutes giving us their reaction to what happened in Congress today. But first, let's go straight to Washington to get a sense of the political moment. Matt Visor is the Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe. Hi there, Matt.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. So everyone's calling this a big win for House Speaker Paul Ryan. Is it as momentous as he needed it to be?
It is, from the House perspective. I think it is a big deal. If you look back 40 days ago, it was a huge embarrassment for them to have to pull the bill. So in the short term, it is a success. There are a lot of caution. There's a lot of caution to look at toward the future, though. They don't know the CBO score, how much this bill will actually cost, how many people will lose health care as a result. And the Senate is a major kind of question mark at this stage.
What are the parts of the bill that could face the most opposition in the Senate?
I think the pre-existing conditions component was the one that was sort of stitched together at the very end to pass the House. There's more moderates in the Senate. They're going to face some of the same scenarios that they did in the House, but with much less margin for error. They've only got a two-seat majority in the Senate. So it's gonna face a lot more roadblocks here in the next couple weeks. And the Senate could, almost start from scratch and do something completely different than the House.
Mm.
So it injects just a lot more uncertainty into this process.
Yeah, so 20 Republicans voted no, 217 voted yes, every Democrat voted no. And, I'm seeing Democrats already trying to rally the party, rally their voters to respond to what happened in the House today. Bernie Sanders sent out a tweet saying, "Our job now is to rally millions of Americans against this disastrous Republican bill to make sure that it does not pass the Senate." Louise Slaughter, Democrat of New York, was quoted in the New York Times as saying, "I have never seen political suicide in my life like I'm seeing today." I mean, could the Republicans who voted yes in certain districts be vulnerable now?
Absolutely. I mean, it's almost the inverse from what happened 7 years ago when Democrats passed Obamacare. You saw immediate reactions in a lot of those districts, and the midterms became an avalanche of support for Republicans. So Democrats are now sort of seeing the same potential here. It's an easier argument for them to make when people are having something taken away from them, as they do with this bill. Whether it's pre-existing conditions and that argument, or just people who will lose their health insurance as a result of this legislation. So I think Democrats, you heard them on the House floor as this was passed, chanting goodbye, na 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 na, hey hey hey, goodbye, to their Republican colleagues, sort of thinking that this is that they have the political upper hand in this. So I would watch, and then the House Republicans are about to now go into recess. They'll be back in their districts next week. So I would watch a lot of those town hall meetings and watch as pressure comes on a lot of the people who voted for this bill.
Yeah. Matt Visor is Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe. Matt, thanks so very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, we are talking in what's turned out to be a special hour of Radio Boston about the vote today, this afternoon, 217 to 213 in the House to pass the GOP health care plan. As you heard Matt Visor tell us, it moves on to the Senate next, where it's probably going to face some more considerable challenges. The reactions from members of the Massachusetts delegation are starting to flow in. Congressman Seth Moulton said the fight goes on in the Senate. He said, quote, "Trump care is nothing but a tax cut for billionaires paid for not just in dollars and cents, but in the lives and health and welfare of working people. Because of Trump care, Americans will live sicker and die sooner. Moulton also said that Republicans in Congress had an opportunity to stand up for all Americans and affirm that access to quality health care is not a partisan issue. Again, that's from Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton. I'm joined in the studio now by WBUR's Martha Biebinger. Hi again, Martha.
Hi, Meghna.
Okay, so, I mean, obviously the Massachusetts delegation is united in its opposition to the GOP health care plan. But react to a little bit to what we heard in this press conference from a few minutes ago from Speaker Paul Ryan, for example. I mean, he says that the act that the House passed today actually makes health care more affordable overall. I mean, how is that viewed here in Massachusetts?
Right, right. So he thinks that it will create a more vibrant marketplace with more choice. In Massachusetts, there's no sense that this will improve the market. There's a lot of fear about what it will do, because if people lose their health insurance, they tend not to go to the doctor until they are sick. And then they go to emergency rooms or clinics where they can get free care, because they are the hospitals and clinics have to cover them. And they are then more advanced in their asthma or their high blood pressure than they would be if they were already taking their medication. So it's not a good situation. That's just on the care front. Then, of course, those costs start to build. The uncompensated care costs start to build for the clinics and hospitals. That's not a good situation. Insurers are left with typically sicker people. The healthy people drop coverage. Sicker people cost more. That means premiums go up, and those costs are for all of us, not just the insurers, but everyone who buys premiums. It's not a good cycle.
Martha, hang in here for just a minute.
Yes.
With me, because I want to bring in a couple other people. Jonathan Gruber, he's an economics professor at MIT and one of the architects of Massachusetts health reform law. He was also a senior advisor to President Obama on the Affordable Care Act. Jonathan Gruber, it's good to have you back.
Good to be here, Meghna.
Also with us is Dr. Don Berwick. He's joining us. He's a pediatrician and founding president and senior fellow at the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. He was also former chief of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services under President Obama. Dr. Berwick, it's good to have you back, too.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
Jonathan Gruber, let me just start with you. Paul Ryan, just a couple of minutes ago, said that the American Health Care Act, again, that was just passed in the House today, will make health care more affordable. He says it takes care of the most vulnerable. It shifts power back to the states. And most importantly, he said, back to the patient. I mean, there's a lot of problems with this bill, but he's still making a moral argument that it's better than Obamacare. What's your reaction to that?
I mean, he's wrong on every count, and he can say what he wants. I mean, we're in an era now where politicians get to say what they want with no ramifications. But on every single count, he's wrong. There's nothing in this law that would increase competition. There's nothing in this law that increases choice. And certainly, so on those two counts, he's wrong. On the other two counts, he's actually making it worse. So if you look at the most vulnerable, once again, we can look at objective numbers. The Congressional Budget Office said that low-income elders will pay up to 10 times more for their health insurance under this law. That's not making them better off. And to make this round pass, they moved it further to the right by allowing states to remove the one protection that's most important in this law, the inability of insurers to charge the sick more than the healthy. They can say what they want about protecting those with pre-existing conditions, but if an insurer can charge a sick person 10 times what they can charge a healthy person, there is no protection against pre-existing conditions.
Hmm.
We're back with the broken insurance market we had before. So they're just totally empty talking points.
Don Berwick, tell us a little bit more about what you see the potential impacts here in Massachusetts. Martha was telling us earlier that we're looking at if the Medicaid cuts do go through, if this becomes law, it could produce some significant changes here in this state.
Absolutely. This law takes almost $1 trillion away from Medicaid, which our low-income people depend. It also seriously hurts lower-income elders. We're looking at major, major increases in health premiums for people age 60, 62, 63 before they get to Medicare. In Massachusetts, it could pull the rug out from under a lot of very terrific improvements we're making in Medicaid coverage and forms of payment for Medicaid. We have a waiver from the federal government that I think now comes under tremendous pressure. We could end up holding a bag for $1 billion or $2 billion of care that we have no other coverage for, and we're a relatively wealthy state. For states that have lower levels of income, they're looking at highly regressive policy. millions of low-income Americans are going to be hurt, and millions of middle-income Americans are going to be hurt by health care insurance premiums. That they're just not going to believe what happens. And the callousness of the Republican of the Republicans who are speaking now about, you know, kind of dissimulating about what's actually going to happen is it's stunning. Mm. One thing they're doing is delaying implementation for a year or two or three for various elements. So I think they're hoping to buy some time while the public goes to sleep. And I hope the public does not go to sleep on this. We got to stop it.
The American Medical Association has just sent out a press release saying the AMA urges the Senate and the administration to work with physician, patient, hospital and other provider groups to craft bipartisan solutions so that all families can access affordable and meaningful coverage while preserving the safety net for vulnerable populations. Martha Biebinger, do you think that's a possibility? I mean, I keep having to mention that the Senate is the next step here, and maybe some of the sharpest edges of the House bill could go away when this bill is dealt with in the Senate.
Well, sure. There's no question that the Senate is going to take a very different look at in many parts of this bill. The bipartisan part, Meghna, I don't see a lot of appetite for that. You heard the president call for that again here, make the point that Democrats hadn't worked with the House on the House version of the AHCA. But in the on the Senate side, you hear people saying, we really don't see a lot to work with here. We don't see anything in this bill that we think is worth building on the Democratic side.
Hmm. Martha, John, and Don, hang in here for just a second, because I want to pull into the conversation while I can. Congresswoman Catherine Clark, she's representative for Massachusetts' 5th Congressional District, and she joins us on the line now. Representative Clark, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
So, I mean, it was a close vote, 217 to 213 in the House. Can you just give us a sense as to how the tenor of the debate today?
You know, I think people are fearful, angry, very concerned about what is going to happen to families at home if this bill proceeds through the Senate and becomes law. And I think there is a lot of resolve that we are going to hold the members of the Republican Party who voted for this accountable now to the American people, and certainly in the polls.
Midterms. So I was just going to say, how do you plan on holding them to account? I mean, in the midterm elections.
You know, we are going to continue to tell the American people what is in this bill, and how it turns the clock back on millions of Americans who have gained access to coverage for pre-existing conditions, gotten rid of lifetime caps. This bill is just fraught with peril for American families. It takes away so many protections. And for families back home in Massachusetts, making being a woman a pre-existing condition again, saying that you can deny coverage for sexual assault, domestic violence, postpartum depression, even C-sections, really cutting back on families' abilities to get treatment when we are in the middle of an opioid epidemic. These are dangerous and callous practices, and the Republicans tried to really paint a picture today on the House floor that everything was going to be taken care of. But they know full well that this bill was about getting, you know, $50,000 in taxes back to every millionaire in this country.
Yeah,
and it was about a transfer of wealth, not taking care of families.
Yeah, because the bill does reduce or repeals many of the taxes that high-income Americans were paying, also some for insurers and drug companies as well. But let me ask you, Catherine Clark, I mean, House leaders have been saying, GOP leaders have been saying that one of the main things they wanted to do was to shift power, shift control, autonomy back to the states. And that is a message that did, at least that part of the message, did have a lot of appeal in certain parts of the country. They may be effectively doing that, for better or for worse, with these Medicaid cuts. I mean, how do you respond to that aspect of the bill?
Oh, well, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, we're giving control back to the states. They're going to make better judgments for them. But just look at Massachusetts, what Don Berwick was just discussing. In Massachusetts alone, this could initially mean $1 billion in loss in health care. So how are states going to make up for this tremendous loss in federal funding and supports? And we know what insurance companies did before the ACA across this country in denying coverage for people who had had cancer as children or had any kind of pre-existing condition and lifetime caps. So it is great rhetoric to say, oh, you know what, this is about freedom and liberty for people to choose the health care they want. But we know that is not how the system works. And we know that when given a chance, insurance companies in the past have put, you know, the vulnerable, the sick, the elderly, you know, they've put their bottom line ahead of them. And that is exactly the invitation that the Republicans in the House gave to the industry again,
yeah.
That it's okay. And it just doesn't, they can't dress this up by saying this is about, you know, returning local control.
Representative Clark, let me just bring WBUR's Martha Biebinger back in here.
Could you tell us a little bit, Congresswoman, about the strategy in the Senate? What is the instruction to Democrats in the Senate?
You know, obviously, I've been very focused on the House, but I think in the Senate, it's going to be hold the line. And we are going to be working very hard to make sure that the American people know what is in this bill. We're going to be pushing to get a score on this bill so that we have the costs. You know, this is right out of the playbook from House leadership, that you try and get a bill in as quickly as you can with as little information and spin it. And I think that what we've already seen from the Senate, from the Democrats, is that they are going to tap the brakes and say, wait a minute. They are trying to do this through procedures in the Senate that, you know, they have to pass through some hoops. And I think it's going to be very difficult for them to do with this particular bill. And we are certainly going to marshal,
excuse me, Congressman, but if this bill has momentum, isn't it in the Democrats' interest to start working with the Republicans on a solution?
You know, we've always been open to that. You know, I mean, you heard Speaker Ryan say to the House, I am not working with Democrats. I hope that will be different in the Senate. You know, there are things that we can do to improve the Affordable Care Act. But the House Republicans weren't open to that. I certainly hope that they will be in the Senate. But it's really on them. They call the shots. And, you know, the Democrats, I think, will work to make positive changes to our healthcare system to make sure it is working in very different markets across this country.
Well, Representative Clark, I'm afraid I'm going to have to take it back from you there. That's U.S. Representative Catherine Clark. She represents Massachusetts 5th. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jonathan Gruber, I know I've got to let you go here in a second, so I want to turn back to you. I mean, react to what you heard Catherine Clark say there, and let me just add something here, that the toughest parts or the most objectionable parts of the House bill to Democrats, you know, the fact that the bill rolls back required coverage for essential services, the fact that states could seek waivers to let insurers charge higher premiums for folks with pre-existing medical conditions, the Medicaid cuts. I mean, those are exactly the things that could be rejected by the Senate, that could be watered down by the moderate Republican senators. And as Martha Biebinger was pointing it out, isn't it in Democrats' best interest to work with Republicans to do exactly that? So do you have hope that that could happen here?
Well, I mean, it's a really important question that comes down to who bears the political fallout if Obamacare, if nothing happens. If Democrats, there's nothing Republicans want to do that makes this law better. Nothing. Okay, they only want to make it weaker. And so I don't see why the Democrats would want to engage in bipartisan, good-natured discussions about improving the law, given that the Republicans really don't want to make it better. Now, if Republicans could convince the Democrats they have ideas for actually making the law better, which they've presented none of so far, then sure, I think it'd be great if Democrats could engage in that. But I just – there's literally no reason for Democrats to step up to the plate here, given that Republicans have presented nothing except just this is basically cover for a big tax cut for the rich.
But then they're ceding the fate of the bill to the GOP entirely.
Well, I mean, that's only if the GOP gets rid of the filibuster. I mean, as long as there's a filibuster, they're not ceding the fate of the bill to the GOP. As long as there's at least three Republican senators who don't want to be out in front on a law that creates millions and millions of more uninsured Americans and gets rid of the insurance protections that are so vital to this law. So I think basically, you know, the question on Democrats would be if they really think that the Republicans can get the votes to pass the law and can get around the filibuster, then I guess, yeah, there's sort of political forcing action. But at this point, I think I just don't see the percentage in them in essentially weakening it when there really has been no Republican ideas that do anything but weaken the law.
Jonathan Gruber, economics professor at MIT and former senior advisor to President Obama on the Affordable Care Act. Thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. My pleasure.
Dr. Berwick, you've been very patient here. Thank you. Thank you for that. But react to what Professor Gruber was just saying there. Do you also share his pessimism in terms of the possibility of any kind of mutually agreeable bipartisan reform to the American Health Care Act?
We don't have any reason for optimism at the moment, but let me make a point. First of all, to fix the ACA, you have to keep the ACA. If we actually wanted to fix it, we know what to do. There's plenty of experience that tells us what we need to do to make them exchanges more robust, to allow negotiation of drug prices by Medicare, to change and improve the incentives for young people to join, increasing marketing of exchanges. All of these are successes. In fact, we know them from states that have been successful, but the Republicans have shown no interest in that. If there was a bill on the floor that said, let's keep the ACA and make it better, we would know what to do. With respect to the state initiative piece, which I want to comment on, there's a real misunderstanding here. The Affordable Care Act introduced a whole lot of state-level innovation. It's supported by the Affordable Care Act. There are state innovation grants that are being taken advantage of by, I think, more than the majority of states. We have lots of variation in implementation. Oregon, Maryland, Arkansas, Massachusetts, many states are doing very exciting things. That stops cold with this bill as all of the responsibility and the costs are passed back to the states. It's stunning to me how little respect the Republicans seem to have here for what the actual facts on the ground are. We're making progress, and we should keep on that road.
Martha Bibinger, what's your thoughts about next steps that might come?
Well, what you hear from the advocates, the folks on the ground, is that they're stepping up their campaign to senators to Democratic and some Republican senators to tell them that they do not want the AHCA to move forward. They want fixes, as Dr. Berwick was describing, to the Affordable Care Act. So you're going to see tons of TV ads and rallies and town hall meetings and all things of this nature to try to generate support from people who do not want to lose the benefits they've gained. Now, whether you see the counterbalance from people who are still waving the repeal Obamacare flag or not, that remains to be seen.
Mm. And, you know, we have been hearing response this afternoon following the House vote. Governor Charlie Baker sent out a statement saying, quote, our administration will continue to protect Massachusetts' health care system, which leads the nation in health care coverage. And while the AHCA, that's the GOP plan, has been amended, it will still result in a massive loss of critical funds for the Commonwealth. Representative Nikki Tsongas put out a statement saying she's heard overwhelming response in opposition to the Republican health care plan. 1,582 residents contacted her office to voice their opposition to what she calls Trump care, while only 5 did so in support. Congressman Stephen Lynch says he's very concerned about the impact of the proposals on families in Massachusetts. But he insists that colleagues on the other side of the aisle, his GOP colleagues, should make a sincere bipartisan effort to improve the act rather than haphazardly repealing provisions of Obamacare. So a variety of responses from Massachusetts legislators. Of course, everyone has the same opinion here or overlapping opinion in Massachusetts. Don Berwick, let me ask you, I really keep coming back to this question over and over and over again. This was a major issue in the election. President Donald Trump promised he was going to do something. Today he did. And yes, there are a lot of Americans oppose the proposed changes in this GOP bill, but many people don't. I mean, we're kind of in a unique situation here in Massachusetts, but when you look nationwide, you know, does this bill have legs?
I hope not. The polls have changed since the Trump campaign. More and more Americans understand what the Affordable Care Act does for them. More and more understand the damage that would occur if we roll back to the pre-ACA days. So I think the political context has changed. And there are red states now whose governors are speaking out very strongly against the kinds of cuts that we're talking about. So I think public sentiment has moved. I think that's partly because of education. Healthcare is a complex arena, as Donald Trump said. And it's taken time to learn. It's taken time to learn what elements of the ACA are helping. But we've watched the numbers. We're at an all-time low in the number of Americans who don't have health care coverage.
Yeah.
There's tremendous innovation going on in Medicaid now. States are varying in ways that are very informative. California's been very successful.
Right.
We need to learn from that. So it's a different context, I think. And I think now these people, the proponents of the AHCA, are going to find themselves out of sync with the majority of
and
Americans.
Context always matters. Don Berwick, founding president and senior fellow at the Institute for Healthcare Improvement in Cambridge and former chief of Medicaid and Medicare, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Martha Biebinger, WBUR reporter, thank you so very much, Martha.
Absolutely, Meghna.
We'll continue coverage on All Things Considered. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.